Hello everybody, this is Loki or Way of Loki, and welcome to No Hit Podcast. Here's my job to interview extraordinary gamers in the realms of challenge running, whether that be no hit runs, completing games in their entirety without getting hit, or in today's case, multiple games without getting hit, speed runs, completing games that would normally take hours in mere minutes, and many other such ventures. Today's guest is Dino Singhal. Dino, or Nico, is a legendary no-hit runner, having completed some of, if not the most difficult marathon no-hit runs to exist in the From Software space, including the Soulsborne no-hit run and the Soulsborne Level 1 no-hit run, requiring beating Demon Souls, Dark Souls 1-3, and Bloodborne back-to-back without leveling up the character in any of those games a single time during the entire run, as well as having completed various niche runs, including Pyromancy Only and Bow Only in DS3, each having their own particular difficulties and strategies involved in each of those runs. Nico is also a full-time streamer and content creator, streaming these runs every day on Twitch, as well as creating various story, guides, and other such videos on YouTube, as well as recently have started a podcast called Posh Lizards with Weedlord Gaming, another notable no-hit runner, talking about the intricacies and talking about various things no-hit running related. In this conversation, we go through Nico's appeal of these multiple game no-hit runs, the intricacies of niche no-hit runs and how they can influence or help in the any percents for the multiple game runs, the aspects of being a full-time streamer and how that came to be, as well as other fun topics such as memes, Mike the Polar Bear, and the origins of Dino Singhal. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Dino Singhal. Right, Nico, welcome to the podcast. Thanks very much for coming on, dude. How's it going?
Everything's fine. Thank you very much for having me. It's an honor.
No worries at all.
I actually listened to almost every episode, like not the new one, but the other ones I listened to.
I appreciate it. I hope you've been enjoying. There's been some amazing people on here. So there is a lot I want to talk about, but I wanted to go right back to the start, really. And Thankfully, you've just tutored me on the correct way to say your name, which is Dino Singhal. And was interested because I believe that means, or is translated as, dinosaurs are cool or horny.
Yeah, cool, awesome. Depends, like, Guile means a lot of things in German, but yes, horny is also a thing that Guile could.
So I was interested what the inspiration or how that name came to be.
Oh, that's actually a really short story and pretty boring as well. I was just watching a lot of, like, or was interested into dinosaurs after I watched like the first Jurassic Park movie as a kid, and I got more and more interested into dinosaurs. And I don't know, in 1999 or 2000, I had my first online account that was the Battle.net, Diablo 2 Battle.net account back then.
Okay. Yeah.
And I had to type in a name, and I typed in Dino Singhal. That's German for dinosaurs are cool or awesome. Yeah.
Sweet.
That is, that's it, basically.
Yeah, it was just something I've been curious about for a while. So let's go into hitless running. What was your first interaction or involvement with hitless running? When was you made aware of it?
Hitless running, I was made aware of in 2018, I believe. Like early, mid-2018. I started watching on Twitch. I started watching Twitch in general more frequently, and then I started streaming myself, of course, and I somehow stumbled into Faraz's stream, and then I got Squill and Hop obviously recommended. I think Faraz was the first no-hit run I watched for the first couple of weeks, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, man, this looks fucking awesome. I want to do it as well. Someone referred Dark Souls in 2018, I believe, they remastered Dark Souls 1. And someone referred it to me, and then I played through the entire remastered. Then I played through Dark Souls 2. Then I played through Dark Souls 3, Bloodborne, and Demon's Souls last.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so addicted. It was insane. I was watching Hitless, and I was playing these games myself. And I think I've rarely been addicted that crazy for a game. And then I was like, man, I just should try it myself. So I tried it, and it looks easier than it actually is. I had a lot of hard early weeks. I first tried no death, but I used a lot of hitless strats for no death, and that's obviously not a good idea. So I struggled. And but you know it, right? When you get better and better, and that PB drops a little further always, that it's just a good feeling, and then you keep going and keep grinding.
Was that your original appeal of the Soul series, that improvement aspect to it?
I think so, yeah. I really started loving these games really quick, and I saw obviously other people having fun with it, and I also saw that there was a team, Team Hitless, and I really, really wanted to join that team. And I'm still, after all these years, proud member of Team Hitless.
What was your first Hitless run?
Dark Souls 3, any percent. I just had a, I don't know, I fell in love with Dark Souls 3 after playing through it for the first time. It's just so, the controls are just way better than in 2 and 1. And it made it easier for me to jump into that Hitless running, I believe, into challenge running in general.
Would you say DS3 is your favorite? As I saw a lot of like your niche runs, which I'd like to go into, have like gone into DS3. So just wondering if that was your preferred one.
Yeah, I would say it's my preferred one. At the moment, to be honest, like Sekiro is also fantastic. I've never understood why, for example, Seki is so like addicted to this game. Or also you as well, right? You played it a lot as well.
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoyed it.
And now I understand. Sekiro has probably the best combat system I've ever played with. This is such a fantastic game in terms of combat and controls overall. But it's the same for Dark Souls 3. I just fell in love with the precision and how good you can actually be. Because if you look at someone like Geno, he is so absolutely amazing at this game that there is always someone who sets the bar even higher, you know, even if you beat it like Hitless or Hitless SL1 or whatever. That's so cool about Dark Souls 3, I believe.
Yeah, definitely. The combat system was one thing, main thing that drew me to Sekiro, just the fact it's, you have to be constantly engaged and focused,
yeah,
or else you're going to be punished very quickly, especially in stuff like, I apologize, my cat just fell off the sofa.
Oh no, poor cat.
Sorry, the combat system where you have to stay engaged at all times, as like in a fight like Genichiro.
It's such an amazing fight. It's such an I hate him so much and I love him so much at the same time.
Yeah,
it's an amazing fight, but he ended a lot of runs. Yeah, that's true. He's still ending runs.
It's weird with Sekiro. It has such a long start to it, I guess. Is like you have Ogre into Gyobu, into Bull, into Genichiro. It's a very condensed start, like speeds up in the back end as you go. Going into the Team Hitless aspect, you've done a few events, not just in Team Hitless, I should say, also the McRaptor stuff in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
Does that aspect of like competitiveness, because Hitless is predominantly like a personal challenge, does the added competitive aspect, do you find that enjoyable or...?
Yeah, of course. I really enjoy these tournaments. That's something I really like. I've never gone into one of these tournaments and hoping for to beat everyone or whatever, or get like a prize pool or something, share of a prize pool. But I like that there is competitiveness, yes, and that people not only showcase that they also like run against each other. And the one with the lowest hit score wins or gets into the second round. And that there were so many new ways, for example, with the Wheel of Pog, Noah Jerome did like a couple of years ago, where you had to do extra challenges throughout your Hitless run. Or, yeah, I think that's super entertaining to watch. And it's fun to play against other people, basically.
Yeah, definitely. I've been enjoying seeing the events been putting off Team Hitless in the recent times, like the 1v1s, and you also participated with the Weedle on the commentary, which I guess was like a nice little precursor to the podcast. How did you find commentating, and if you've done it previously as well?
I like it. In that particular case, I was a little bit shocked because I didn't know a lot about the run, and it was hard for me to keep up because these guys are really fast. I'm not that fast, as you might know. I'm just like stalling a lot.
Who was it? It was Tricky and Josh Arena, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah, exactly. Josh and Tricky. And those guys are super fast on Dark Souls 3. And it's hard to keep up with that commentary. Even though I know the game really well, it's hard to keep up because they do different routes and they are just like way quicker. And they use some crazy ass strats.
And you have to have like iguana eyes where you're like keeping one eye on each screen. And...
yeah, exactly.
So if we go into niche runs then, what do you find enjoyable about these niche runs? And I'll describe niche runs as Nico's done runs such as Pyro Only, No Hit, and also Bow Only in DS3, and others. And Magic Only in the future, I believe. Your Jandalf runs.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm planning, yes.
What's the appeal of these niche runs separate from either the traditional longer all bosses or multiple games?
I think it's just the appeal is that you have to relearn a lot of stuff, especially for the Pyromancy or for the bow only run on Dark Souls 3, for example. I consider my any percent like the standard or also the SL1 any percent as really consistent because I played it a lot, and at some point you just get that consistency down and then you're getting hit way less. But on a run like the bow only, also the Pyromancy, of course, I had to relearn a lot of things because you have to do different routes. For example, you have to free that, what is this guy's NPC's name? You have to free on High Wall. You need Loretta's bone, and then you go to that guy and give it to him. Gray Rat? Gray Rat? Is that his name? I think it's Gray Rat, yeah. He sells you like better arrows and all of that stuff, right? Or in Pyromancy, you obviously need to free the Pyromancy guy in the Undead Settlement. And there's a lot of new stuff to learn and a lot of new ways to go. And I think that's what I really like, to just spread out a little bit and learn more about different no-hit runs instead of just running that one run with the meta weapon and that's it.
Could you describe, because there's a common meme in the no-hit community around bows, especially with like DS2 and such. Yeah. Could you describe some cases in DS3 where having bow only is the worst thing?
Bow only in Dark Souls 3 that was one of the hardest any person. I was going into that run, no joke, and I thought, yeah, we'll get it in a couple of days, you know. It's Dark Souls 3, we're getting it. But there was a big surprise. Bows are extremely, like, they're just not viable at all. They don't do any damage. It's crazy. You can have a plus 10 bow and it doesn't do a lot of damage. And bosses like, for example, Pontiff get ridiculously hard because you have to like kite him around, and he has this stupid jumping attack, and in phase 2 he starts dodging your arrows, and you have to deal with the clone and him, and you have to fight every boss a little bit differently. And some cheeses are also harder or not possible, of course, like the twin princess Lothric and Lorien. That cheese is like doable, but it's quite hard with a bow. And I think in Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 2 the bow is way stronger than in 3. I'm not even quite sure if that is the reason why Faraz, Squill, Hop, Kobe, Cheese, and Lefoyu did not route this run with a bow. Maybe that's the reason, because the bow sucks in Dark Souls 3.
Has there been any crossover from these niche runs into your like any sense where you've learnt aspects of the run?
Yeah.
Or different aspects of the run through these niche runs that are then carried over.
Yeah, I think so. You want an example, right?
If you can think of one.
Okay, wait a second. Definitely. Like, the best example would be Dark Souls 2. Because Dark Souls 2, SL1 is just way harder than if you compare Dark Souls 1 level to SL1 and Dark Souls 3 level to SL1. Dark Souls 2 is so hard because of the ADP that you can't level that stat, and you get no extra iframes, and you have to like outrun a lot of stuff. And I learned outrunning bosses like just circling around without rolling any attacks, like Velstedt, for example, or also other boss fights like the Flexile or stuff like that, right? And that helps a lot. If you learn this for quite some time, I mean, it took us almost 4 months to beat this run, and I think, especially in Dark Souls 2, I just kept going with these strats because you have more damage, and when you do not roll attacks, you can punish the enemy a little bit harder most of the time, at least, because you don't need the stamina for the roll, and you're like almost like sometimes you're faster as well. The way I fight the Rotten changed as well a lot. I was fighting him with lock on a lot, and you can't do that on SL1, or you can, but it gets a little bit hard. And Watcher and Defender the same. God, there are so many differences in Dark Souls 2. Yeah, Watcher and Defender, I fought them with lock on for quite some time, but since the SL1 runs, I I don't. I changed because it's not possible with the crossbow and on SL1.
Did that improve consistency in the leveled runs as well?
Yeah, I think so. It's so weird to tell because I felt like at the end of this SL1 Soulsborne run, I felt super consistent in all of these five games. And then we came back to this six game run now. And the consistency was extremely high early on. But at some point, it dropped off a little bit. I don't know why. I think it's most of it, it's mental state. But overall, I learned a lot, I would say. And the way I play the games, or yeah, I think I improved over these SL1 times. There are just sometimes where you don't get as many any percents as you really want to.
I do want to go into the mental aspects of no hit running, but I'm going to leave that for just a moment because this isn't so much a question, more I'd be interested in your thoughts of the difference between luck and RNG, because you can have bad RNG in a fight in the moves a boss can do, yeah, and bad luck in the case of something new occurring or an unlucky combination,
yeah,
which may go past the point of bad RNG. And just was interested, especially with your experience doing multiple game runs, your thoughts on RNG and bad luck, or luck in general.
Yeah, bad RNG is something you can deal with, right? I mean, even if you have like a bad fight with a lot of bad RNG, it's more likely that you get hit in those fights, of course. But I think if you practice it enough, you can deal with bad RNG most of the time. And bad luck, I mean, if you have like a bad combination of attacks, or if roll caught or iframed on opening a door or whatever, something like that, that's just nothing you can do about it, right? There's just nothing you can do about it. And I would say those are two separate things, maybe. I mean, you could also consider bad RNG as bad luck, of course, because you have it like technically in harder fight than you would have if whoever you fight against.
Yeah, it's just been a thought that's been going over my mind, such as like a bad RNG boss, because I think a lot of things can be tried to put down to RNG, even though a lot of things can be combated or worked out, such as potentially Soul of Cinder, for instance, that you can have the bad combination with the homing soul mass and then a phase change, which is bad RNG but can be dealt with either through legging it or boning out or stuff like that. Yeah, or something like Storm Ruler, for instance, that is more pure sense of RNG in some senses.
Yeah, I mean, when like the Yorm eats the hit and just attacks you anyways, or
yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that is obviously, that's beyond RNG. That's just the glitch.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's just him pressing the button again, I believe. Yeah, that's a difference. You're right. That's definitely a difference. I would say it like this. Bad RNG can happen, and you can, if you have practiced enough, you might be able to deal with that bad RNG. But if you're really unlucky, there's just some situations you will not survive. That's just how it is. And what I learned throughout grinding these long-ass runs is that you need a percentage of luck. If you don't have it, you will not get the run. Because at some point, something stupid will happen if you're unlucky or if you're not on that one run. And then, yeah, all it takes to reset.
Going into some of these niche runs, and especially with your marathon runs, there is a multiple day or multiple stream aspect to them. Do you find it easy or difficult to go into a second part or second day of a run, or how do you like warm up, so to speak?
Yeah, I find that quite difficult, depending on how far we are in, but I find that quite difficult. That's true. I think I need some time to groove myself back into the run. Let's say we are three games in and there are three games left. And if I start the new game, I know exactly what I have to do. But at the beginning, it's a little bit shaky, everything. And then I need to groove myself into that run. And after, like, I would say after half an hour, roughly an hour maybe, I am in back in that flow of things. And then it works out way better. And it's also not all every day the same, to be honest. Some days I start the stream and I go into a run and I'm really pumped and I'm sure that today will be a good day, and sometimes I'm concerned about getting hit early on or whatever, and it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy sometimes, because if you're shaky and if you think too much about what could happen and stuff, then I at least often end up getting hit.
Something you said there about going into can be a difference per day. To take that a different way, to do with your multiple game runs, so which is so that would be Nico's example, having done the 5 and currently trying to do the 6 games of From Software back to back to back, no hits. So Nico has done trilogies, which was the Dark Souls 1-3 back to back in various versions, Soulsborne, which is the 5 games excluding Sekiro, and Soulsborne SL1, which was completed without leveling up on each of those games. I'll start right from the beginning, actually. So what was the appeal of doing a Soulsborne 5 game run?
I guess it was Hop. I don't know, I was watching him for a long time, and he's one of my favorite streamers, and he influenced my stream in a lot of different ways, and I was following him with like what he was doing for quite some time, and I started also really liking it. I mean, if I did not like it, I would not do it probably, but I really enjoy these runs as well, because you can, what I really love about it is that you just can change the game, right? If we do one game run and you have to do that one early game over and over again on a bad day, for example, I have that luxury to change the game and just do something else. It's quite cool, but it can be quite challenging mentally sometimes when you get like a hitless run, or when you have like a couple of days where it doesn't work out that well, and then you have that huge pile of content in front of you. You know you have to go through like 5 games now hitless, and you cannot think of a way to beat this, and this sometimes is really troubling. But on the other hand, I really enjoy all of these games, and that's why I play them all, I guess.
Would you say the freedom to change the games during these runs is also a good aspect of, I guess, avoiding boredom? So being able to keep like up to date on each game.
Yeah, especially at the beginning. At some point, you know all the early games, right? And then you can get bored as well. But I think it's harder to be bored if you do like 5 different games, of course, than only one. And it's also fun because you have 5 or even 6 different games with 6 different play styles, and you have to just adapt to every single game all the time, and it's quite an experience, and I really enjoy all of these games, even though not everyone likes all of them, of course. But the biggest influence was Hop. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's fine. How do you order the games? Of course, setting them randomly so you've got a chance to keep refreshed or topped up on each of them, but do you have a preference towards putting more difficult games at the start or at the end, or...
That's a good question, yeah. Yeah, at some point, I'll do it just random. Like, we'll just do a random order. At the moment, for example, we do Sekiro first most of the time, because I'm still quite shaky on Sekiro. We'll get, like, a lot of hitless runs on Sekiro lately, but it's still really hard for me to consistently no-hit Sekiro. There's obviously a best-case scenario or best way to go through these games, and there's also harder way, I would say. For example, the Dark Souls trilogy is really consistent, so if I would do that at the end of the run, that would give us a higher chance to no-hit the run, I would say. But I can't just do that all the time, because you cannot take any of these games for granted. You can get hit on all of them. And sometimes it's also beneficial, at least that's what happened to me in the Pyromancy runs, to do the hard stuff at the end, because, I don't know, it's not as pressuring. It feels less pressuring if you have a game you are not as good on at the end of the run, because, I don't even know, that's kind of a psychological effect, I believe, because you do not think that you will no-hit it anyways or something, and that takes off some pressure, or you're not quite as convinced that you're going to get the run now, and that maybe takes off some pressure. So there are two different approaches, basically, and both are valid, but I think the most runs I got with the strong games at the end, where I fought Solo Cinder, basically, at the end, because Dark Souls 3 is my best, and Dark Souls 2 is also really consistent leveled, and I should technically put these two games always at the end, but I don't do it all the time.
We touched on mentality a couple of times, so I think that would be a good one to go on to. I watched a good video you did on mentality, in which you described a journey that you yourself, in your personal experience, went from anticipation, realization, and discipline.
Yeah.
Could you explain that progression?
Yeah, I can, yes. My anticipation going into the run is always wrong. I always anticipate to get this stuff fast, because in my head, I don't know if it's, maybe it's the same for you, but in my head, I always like go through this run and it feels like, yeah, it's actually quite doable.
Oh, definitely. I've done it so many times. It's gone, yeah. Oh, we should get this in a couple of weeks.
And yeah.
Three weeks later, it's like, ah, this new
stuff. Yeah, and that's what you anticipate then, right? And then you start it and you realize, fuck, this is way harder than I thought. And I can hit on so many different places. And I have to learn so much more than I actually thought. And that's where it hits me hard. That's realization, basically. And then I have to go through this. I battle myself all the time over days and weeks, depending on the run. And then I get into that stage, like that last stage of discipline, where I just practice a lot the stuff I am bad at. I think I'm quite reflected on stuff that I can't and cannot do. And
so do you mean having a good understanding on if a hit occurs, that was or wasn't your fault? Or what do you mean by self-reflective?
Yeah, I mean like with self-reflective that I know that I'm like not the best in these games. I know that there are so many people out there who are just way better than I am in terms of skill and in terms of knowledge as well. I mean, between my ass and Geno's, there are like worlds in between, right? He's so much better on these games. That's insane. And that's what I mean, actually, that there is so much to learn for me still, even though I do this for quite some time. And then I go into that stage of discipline where I start practicing a lot of that stuff I really have to practice. And sometimes I just think to myself, before I'm in that discipline stage, I think to myself, yeah, we'll just keep going. Maybe we'll stumble through. Maybe I'll have a good day and then I don't have to practice as much. And it'll work out somehow. But after some time, I realized, most of the time at least, I realized that I have to put in the work, because I'm just someone who has to put in the work, because I'm not as talented, I would say, than other people are.
I will not deny that Geno is a god.
Yeah.
But I also think you may be putting yourself down a bit too much, as you are an established and have done amazing, incredible runs and have probably a wider breadth of knowledge than 0.000 etc. percentage of runners.
Yeah,
so I would still say you are one of the most amazing runners that are currently doing or continuing with no hit.
Yeah, thank you very much. But I just like see those incredible people like Geno, and I think to myself that that's just a level I cannot reach, you know, because he's so freaking good at what he does sometimes. It's like I sometimes watch him and I'm just like, what the fuck? He's so good. Yeah, but thanks. I'm trying my best.
Sorry, I'm trying to think of what point, because I want to stay on this mentality aspect for just a sec. So I think a wording you've used previously, and I think affects all runners, so I would be interested if you could tell me a story. So the words that I wrote down, that I noted, was anxiety of failure, which is to do with, which you can rephrase if I misrepresent this, but where you're in a run and you're just thinking ahead and concerned of getting hit and resetting no matter the time of the run, especially but in longer runs. But could you tell a story or a run where this affected you and then how you managed to overcome or improve or try to get above that?
Yeah, that in fact affected me the most in my Dark Souls 3 runs I did, like the Pyromancy All Boss run, for example. Because I knew that I know exactly how to fight these bosses, and I knew that I should be able to do this, but it took me quite some time to beat that all boss run on Pyromancy only. I mean, of course you have to learn more, and the DLCs are quite hard because Pyromancies are not that strong in the DLCs. But I had this anxiety of failure there a lot. I think there are two different ways. If you think ahead in a run and then you think about what could go wrong in that run now, and that's again one of these self-fulfilling prophecies, because you tend to overthink those situations then, and then something goes wrong. And there's also something similar in boss fights. I had that quite a lot when I started off with Sekiro, that you have these boss like Genichiro, for example, and you do not know him a lot. Like, he kills you a lot and then you have to reset, and then you already think about running back to Genichiro. Please don't hit me again. What do I have to do to know it, Genichiro? I have to do this, or I have to do that. And then you start even thinking while you fight the boss, what if he does that, then I have to do this. And you stop trusting your build-up muscle memory and your instincts or whatever, right? Just the knowledge you gathered.
Yep.
And that's also some type of anxiety, I would say, or that you overthink a certain situation, and that leads to another hit most of the time. You have to, or that's what I learned at least, it's way better for me if I just relax, or I try to relax at some point it's possible, and just fight the boss, because I am convinced and I know that I practiced enough and I can just beat him with my build-up muscle memory, basically, that I do not have to think about this fight while fighting the boss. You know what I mean? Or does that sound stupid?
No, that's definitely, like, Genichiro is...
He's a good example.
For definite, he was one of the ones that I always tried to, at least when I was learning him, trying to guess what he was going to do next. And in the meantime, he does something else. And because of how quick the combat is, he's already booted me across the arena.
that was so hard for me at the beginning, because it's so different if you compare it to Souls, right? And I don't know, where you're in these fast-paced boss fights where you have to do 10 different, like 10 decisions in 10 seconds, basically. Everything's happening at once, and you just need to trust yourself. If you do not trust yourself, you're just not able to beat it, I believe. And it's the same for all the other games as well, but in Souls it's a little bit more laid back. It feels like this is a slower way of fighting, of course.
Yeah, there is, it feels you can, if there is like some panic moment in majority of Dark Souls bosses, there are some which will punish you for legging it, so to speak. But a lot of these Sekiro bosses will hunt you down if you try to flee. Can we go on to, so we went into how Hob has been big inspiration in the runs that you've been doing. The biggest one I'd say at the moment is Soulsborne SL1. What was the thought or the idea of going into that for you?
Soulsborne SL1 was kind of the first run I did where I did not had a role model doing it before I started it. And I just thought to myself, I was thinking about what can I do to not necessarily to impress other people, but to leave like a little bit of a footprint in that challenge running Souls history, you know what I mean? Because I really love this community, and I love those runs as well. And like, for example, for Raz and Squilla and Hop and a lot of other people, they left like a footprint in that hitless history, you know what I mean? You cannot make like a history, a hitless video without naming those people, of course, because they left that footprint. And I wanted to do that as well with that run, I believe. That was my initial thought, that I wanted to achieve something that, like, in 10 years from now, people will probably still talk about Dark Souls. And maybe there's this one person that maybe talks about that SL1 run, and then they remember, or this guy remembers that I did that on stream a while ago or whatever.
I think it's already had an impact. I mean, there was the Cal Jobst video on it, wasn't there?
Yeah.
What was your, like, reaction to that once it came out?
Oh, I knew, of course. Like, Carl does an incredible amount of research, and I was talking to Carl and providing footage, and I knew that the video would be... I did not know when he would release it, but I knew that he was working on a video. And I don't even know why he started that. At some point, he just messaged me, and he said, yeah, hi, can I interview you for a video? And I was like, yeah, of course, please interview me. Yeah, that was quite an honor. That's true. Yeah, that was cool. But there are also quite a lot of people mentioned in this video, right?
So. Oh, for definite. It was like a whole, like, public kind of, like, to show to the, like, general YouTube population the idea of no hits.
Yeah, that's so cool. That's really good for the community as well, right? That
for definite
drew so much attention, and I think Hitless is growing rapidly, especially the Spanish part of Hitless is just exploding. Insane.
Community is huge, because, like, the main games I play, at least for the moment, have been Sekiro and Hollow Knight, and the Spanish community in that is massive.
Yeah, I think Alex is playing Hollow Knight as well, right? That's why so many people are playing Hollow Knight on the Spanish side of Hitless at the moment, because Alex de Capo, I believe, is his name. He's one of the biggest Spanish streamers.
And then Chuson as well has been doing no hit for a good while now as well, hasn't he? And then so many growing streamers. I spoke with Spyro a little bit, but, like, Rather in Sekiro and Zerob in Hollow Knight. So, so many, like, both huge Spanish streamers and up-and-coming growing streamers.
It's insane.
I want to touch on to learning, the approach to learning for you. Mm. I'll phrase this as, do you have a difference between approaching an extension to an existing run, for instance, if you were going on to an all bosses run as opposed to an any percent, and a fresh learning aspect, such as Sekiro, for instance, which I believe it's only a few months ago that you reintroduced that in order to go into God Run 2?
That's actually a good question. I have no idea if I have a different... I never thought about that. I think that I practice more and I'm more disciplined at the beginning when I started with Sekiro, because I knew I need it. And when I'm doing something like all boss, Pyromancy all boss Dark Souls 3, for example, I tend to slack a little at the beginning until I realize that this is different and it's hard because it's different. And then I have to go and practice there as well, of course. But I think I'm a little bit more eager to learn it when it's a completely new game. I also learned Hollow Knight. I never no-hit it. It did not work out too well on my stream, at least not yet, but I'm... Hollow Knight's a fantastic game, and I really want to know it that at some point. But I think I tend to practice more when it's a new game. That's actually a good question. I've never thought about this.
I'd like to go into variety, but I think that's more in terms of live streaming aspect, which is a conversation that I also want to go into. But I just want to stick with the learning aspect, with what's the practical, like, application of practice? Is it segmented? Is it bosses? Is it routing? So waking up in the morning, how does the practice go down?
Depending on the game. For Sekiro, for example, it was almost only boss fights, because the running section, I mean, you know it, the running sections are not that hard on Sekiro.
Yeah, it's very little issues.
I needed to learn, like, jumping and grappling and all of that stuff, because you see it, like, when Seki does it or when someone else does it, right? It looks super easy and smooth for him, or if you watch it. But that's not that easy, actually. It took me quite some time to get that grappling down, and that I have to turn the camera to actually get another grappling spot on, for example, these branches and stuff, that I always have to, it takes me quite some time to realize how many little things you have to learn to fully understand the entirety of the game. And for, what was the question? For Sekiro, it was...
So like the practical measures. So if you woke up in the morning and needed to practice Sekiro, for instance,
oh yeah,
would so, it be yeah. a have to do the boss so many times, or would it be you have a set amount, so want to practice the worst bosses from a previous day or something like that?
Yeah, depending on how far I'm in, and how, if we got the run already once or twice, I practice probably if it's early stages, I practice everything, especially early to mid game, to get this consistent, because I really like to like that approach to practice a lot of early and mid game, because you have to do it anyways, and you have to like get a consistent early and mid game to even end up in late game a lot. And once that's done, I tend to like practice the bosses I get hit on a lot, and obviously the end game bosses. I still to this day, and I'm. And we got like no hit runs. I still practice MI and Ishin sometimes, because I don't know, when you get, maybe it's the same for you, but when you end up there and you get hit on, let's say, a fire Ishin, then he sneaks into your head, right? And then you feel like, man, I gotta practice this guy again, because I don't feel that safe anymore fighting him. And I don't want to lose an entire hour of running because I do a stupid mistake, or I don't trust myself on Ishin.
There's quite a few bosses in Sekiro that will punish even the tad bit of overconfidence.
Yeah.
Especially with like Ishin's like dodge mechanics, which it's very harsh way to end a run. I was going to say, jumping must have been even more of a surprise in Sekiro, coming from, there's like a dedicated jump button. Compared to like,
yeah, it was crazy. Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, have you seen like everyone like losing their minds over that Elden Ring footage? It's just the jumping.
Yeah, that I think it looked not too bad. I don't know if it was an early build or not, but it did not look too bad.
I thought it looked nice. Like it probably is early, because that's normally how like what people get leaked since outside. But
I'm super excited for Elden Ring.
Yeah, I'm just like, I just. Bring it to me. I just want it when it's here. Just...
Yeah. Same here.
Hitless running will definitely come back up, but I want to veer off into live streaming, as you are full-time, both a live streamer and content creator, I would say, having increased volume of YouTube videos and started a podcast recently as well. So could we also... go back to the beginning once again. I think I've done this three times now. You started in German, right?
Yeah, exactly, yes.
What was the change, or what caused the change from German to English streaming?
Oh, that was Hitless. Because I just got sucked more and more into that Hitless community and genre, and then... Like, I think the first person, or when I realized, okay, now I have to change, and then I also, after that very stream, I remember that when I was talking to Chu about it, and what she thinks, if I should change the language or not. And it was Jerome, because he was jumping into my chat at some point and asking me if I would participate in tournaments he is doing. And then I was like, yeah, of course, it would be an honor, but my English is really bad, and I was anxious at the beginning, of course. Because of that, it was hard. Then I had this transition period where I was doing both German and English. And yeah, it was not easy for me at the beginning, because also a lot of people left, of course, from the German side, because I understand that it's just not their own language, and they maybe just want to relax. And if they have to think about what I'm saying on stream, or if they are not as good at in English, then... it's obviously a hassle to watch a stream where you have to like translate what the guy says. And yeah, it took me quite some time, and it was quite troubling at the beginning, but overall I would say it was the right decision. And yes, it was because of Jerome and Hitless, because I really wanted to be... Back then there was no... like that Spanish part of the community was not as big. There was Kanan and Nihiro and maybe a couple of other people. But apart from those guys, I did not know a lot of Spanish speaking no hitrunners, I believe. And then the major, the big part was obviously the English community. And I wanted to communicate with everyone. So I learned speaking English, basically. I mean, I knew how to speak it. We learned that in German schools, of course, but it's not enough to communicate on stream very well. So I had to, I knew I had to speak it to get better at it, of course. And yeah, I think that's what I did on stream. I just tried to speak as much as I could, even though I still to this day do a lot of mistakes.
Well, I do have to say in the just over a year that I've been, I guess, aware of you, your English has improved a huge amount, and I thought it was decent when I first found your stream, so I think it's very good.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think there's a lot to learn, of course, still, but I feel like quite comfy now going live and just speaking like not German. I don't think about, like, when I 2 years ago or 1.5 years ago or whatever, I was always thinking about, man, what am I talking about today. I was always trying to set up a little bit the stream and always thinking about how do I phrase certain things, and that was not as easy back then. And nowadays it's just, yeah, I don't even think about it anymore. I know that I still do mistakes, and I know that I sometimes obviously don't speak as well as someone who speaks English native, but yeah, that's just, I guess, part of my stream, that I have to ask for words sometimes, or someone has to explain me stuff.
Sort of a side point, but has anyone like complimented outside, like IRL life, I guess, of your English, or do you not really use English outside of stream?
Not that much, actually. I think not. No, my brother speaks really well English. I think better than I do, and Chu as well. She speaks like better English than I do. So no. I don't know, actually. I think not I don't speak it as much. I speak, most of the time I speak German, but like off stream, but overall I would say I speak more English at the moment than I speak German,
because of how much you stream.
Yeah, because of the daily streams, and if I speak it like every day for 5-6 hours, and that's a lot of talking.
I did want to go into that. So from everything I've seen, you have a very high work ethic, being a daily streamer, as you say, doing 5 to 6 to longer hour runs, hour streams every day. Is that something that kind of work ethic, something you've always had, or was it something you've cultivated while streaming or in another venture?
I think in terms of streaming, I always had that, because it's a lot of fun for me as well. Obviously, it can be stressful sometimes. I had like also days or weeks where I felt really bad and where it was stressful and I wanted to stream less.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
I have my own cat interruption. It's all good.
But overall, it's a lot of fun and it doesn't feel like work to me. And I would say that I'm doing this because I really want to. And I know that it needs a lot of work if you want this to maintain full time. I don't know if you know about it, but I was not a full time streamer until like almost 1 year ago, and in October last year I got laid off from my job because of corona, and I was working part time anyways at this point, and so they laid me off, and I started full time on Twitch at that point, so because I didn't find a job. I did not find a job, and that quick at least. And then I tried full-time streaming. Of course, that was quite troubling for the first couple of months. Now it's working out way, way, way better.
What changed in terms of what you were doing? So part-time streaming, I imagine it was just like the stream and then sleep, and because of the amount of time you were streaming. What did you then add to your day once you were full-time?
A lot of YouTube. I learned a lot with like the cutting program and the YouTube, and I was quite engaged with the rest of social media. And I I think I just put more work into everything because I can now, because I have the hours to do so. Back then I didn't do much as much on YouTube. And now that I have the time, I just try to put in all the time I can, because I need, because I know that there are a lot of great people out there, and I think it's, you can only make it if you have like a lot of, like if you put in a lot of work, and if you also really enjoy what you're doing, and that high work ethic is just a necessity almost, I believe, to make it on social media, because there's just so much competition, and there are also a lot of people who are, yeah, they're quite dedicated, right? But it's not always an easy job. It a lot of people think it might be easy, that you just play some video games every now and then, but it's not that easy.
What's an aspect of being a full-time streamer or a full-time content creator that people may not be aware of?
Transferring to full-time streaming, it's a lot of anxiety because you're self-employed, mm-hmm. and then you don't have this like stable income any longer, and you have to just try to make it on your own, basically, right? And that was quite anxiety-inducing at the beginning. I had months where I legit, no joke, didn't know if I can pay everything. That was rough sometimes, and I think a lot of people would be surprised how much work it is as well. I mean, obviously, you can work whenever you want to work, and it's a lot of fun as well, as I said, but it's more, there's more to it than people think, I believe, because everyone wants to be a YouTuber or a live streamer or whatever these days, but it's not like not everyone can be an Hassan Abi or an Asmongold and make millions of their streams, right? The majority of the streamers make like minimum wage, or they make a little bit more than that. That's just the reality of things. And I think the anticipation that when your Twitch channel is doing okay, that you're making like 5 digits a month, is just, that's just not true. That's not reality.
I think the Twitch leaks that occurred in the recent past, at the time of recording at least, which people might not be aware, there was a leak of the pay from Twitch. So that included like subscriptions and ad revenue, that, and bits, of course, that streamers got in the top 10,000, I believe. And I think it got to the top 3,000 to 4,000. And then below that, it was less than certain countries' minimum wage. And I think that was a big reality, kind of. Of course, that didn't include other aspects, but there are factors included in that.
Yeah, and those were the top 10,000 people, right? That, you have to keep that in mind. There are millions of streamers out there, and from the top 10,000 people, not even half of them could do this full time. That's quite stunning, actually. I knew that someone like Asmongold makes like millions off their Twitch, and obviously there are also sponsorships. Most of these people have sponsorships and shit. But it kind of was. I don't know. I was a little bit shocked to see that there are so many people in the top 10,000 streamers on this platform that cannot even make a living off their stream, or barely a living off their stream. Obviously, it depends on in what country you live and if you have family or not. And
yeah, there's so many factors, like depending on like the audience of the people, because in the top, at least from when I was like having a look at the numbers, because I'm a bit of a nerd and like marketing, so I think around the level of people who were just about, again, this is just from the Twitch data, not including other potential revenue streams, which not all streamers do, but I think it was like around 200 or just under average viewers was the minimum. So it's sort of, I think a lot of people like think of partner as making it, yeah. But like there's so much more after that.
No, that's so far from it. Yeah, of course, partner is just the first step. That's super cool, and you get these emote slots and everything, and that's fantastic, of course, but there's more to it. Of yes, I learned so much over the last 3 years. That's insane. I was actually thinking that as well when I started off Twitch. I never planned to make a living off Twitch, but at the very beginning, of course, at some point I was pursuing it as well. But at the beginning, I was like, yeah, if you have like 50 people in your chat, you can live off your stream, or you know what I mean? Because there are 50 people watching you every day. That's quite a lot. And that is a lot, actually. Like, you have to... Those are numbers on Twitch, but you have to realize that there are 50 people watching you, or 100 people watching you. And that's amazing, actually.
Has that ever, like... Does that ever affect you, the numbers? Or have you gotten, like, used to it? Because there's some insane numbers. Very recently, the Happy Hob recently got the God Run 2 and got to 26,000 viewers, which is an insane number to think about.
That's crazy. Yeah, after that Carl Jobst video, and this year was pretty good. Like, I'm not gonna lie, in terms of growth, this year was the best year so far for my stream, I would say.
What factors would you say you went into that for this year then?
I went into this year with high hopes. I wanted to make it to the point where I have like no anxiety over will I make it past the next month, or do I have to, I don't know, search for a part-time job again on the side to just make it barely. And I don't know, I think at some point you cannot do that as well, because you have to save up some money. As like, I'm 32, you know, and I can't just for the next 10 years try my best and hope that it works out at some point, or that there will be an oil sheik I don't know sending money my way.
It can't just be like a month to month thing. There needs to be like an additional or growth aspect to it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what I was looking for, and this happened this year, up to this point at least. I hope it continues. I'm putting in like as much work as I can. I'm super dedicated, and I love this community and the runs, and I don't know, I'm really happy and thankful that it worked out. I think this is also a good reason why I work, why I'm live every day, and why I like put in that many hours into these runs, and because I did a lot of different jobs in my life, you know, and this is by far, I mean, it's not a perfect job, of course, and there are downsides, but this is by far the best job I have ever done. I have so much fun every day, and it's just so cool to relax with these people and to talk to everyone about like cocks or I don't know what we're talking about every day. And it's just so much fun, you know? And that's, I really appreciate being in that position, and I know how lucky I am that I am in that position, because there is also a luck factor to it. I mean, of course you can put in like as many hours or as much work, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you can make it. That's not a guarantee. And that's why I'm so happy and so thankful that it worked out for me. Especially the last year was absolutely crazy, and I'm super thankful, and I know exactly that this is a very, very special position I'm in. Not because I'm special, so I'm just because I was just a lucky bastard, I believe.
There is definitely a look, from what I've observed, like there's definitely that luck aspect, but I would also say there is also a higher degree of work ethic required to, I can't remember the exact quote, but it's something like, luck is being prepared when opportunity presents itself, or something along those that line. I think you were in these circumstances. A really good video to watch of Dino or Nico's is first year or first full year of streaming. I found that a very interesting watch, so I'd recommend watching that if you want to go any further into that. I was going to go into the wider reach, because like the Carl Jobst, and I also remember being there when Moist Critical dropped by, which was insane. I do remember, I did find one Game Rant article.
Oh god, no.
Which is...
Oh no.
...stated that Nico being... an absolute god speedrunner and hitless runner, having completed the trilogy in under 2 hours. Could you tell me about
this? I don't know. That was back then. Where I think it was after we beat the first trilogy no hit run on stream, and then I don't know what happened. I've never got an email. They never asked me any question. An article from the Game Rant. I did not even know that magazine, online gaming magazine before. And they published an article where they talked about the trilogy run, and this was like a world record. It was done within. I had a timer going. Okay, maybe I should say that. I had a timer going for every game separately, so I could like just see if I get like faster in these any percents, or if there is anything I could do better to get faster in these any percents, to make it past the trilogy in like, let's say, 7 hours, six, 7 hours or whatever. And they thought, I think that's what they thought at least, that this Dark Souls 3 timer at the end of the trilogy run was the timer for the entire trilogy run. But they never did any research on it. They just assumed that's the case. And then they made an article about it, claiming that I did a crazy worlds first. They also wrote a lot of other bullshit in that article. For example, that I killed every single enemy and that I'm able to block attacks, I believe, if I remember correct.
I think it was a well-intentioned article with not much reading into at all.
Yeah, no reading into. It was all about the clicks. I actually wrote them an email afterwards and I said, please guys, can you take that off? This is just not correct, like nothing's correct. And they did not even message me back. The article is still live up to this day, I believe. They made like some clicks with this.
Yeah, I recommend anyone going to have it a read. It's a great piece of fiction.
Funny, yeah. That's quite actually funny. Yeah.
So I'd like to go on to community. I think you have one of the nicest communities on Twitch and Discord as well.
Oh, thank you.
How would you say you, I don't know what the exact wording would be, but like cultivate or like encouraged such a nice community, let's say?
Oh, the shoutouts to my mods, I guess. I always try to be nice and forthcoming, and I try to be very inclusive, and I talk about a lot of things. There are obviously red lines you cannot cross, but for most of the things, I'm a fan of second chances. I think that's a good way to phrase it. And you can always talk to me about almost everything, and I guess someone once said that the chat reflects, at least to a degree, the personality of the streamer a little bit. And obviously, as I said, shoutouts to my mods. They do incredible work. They do stuff I cannot do, and that's banning people. It's really hard for me to time out or ban someone. That's just, I don't know, I'm just too nice, I guess. That's what they always say to me. I'm too nice, and that people try to exploit that sometimes. And that's what they do for me. They are, especially Chu, she tries to keep the stream safe and comfy for everyone else. And it's just that if there's one person and this guy is new and he annoys a lot of other people, I know, then it's most of the time, I know if your stream is small and you want to keep like everyone all the time because you want to grow in numbers. I had the same struggle. I know exactly how that is. But at some point, or maybe you should do that from the very beginning on. I didn't do it as well, but maybe you should. You have to get rid of people you don't want in your chat, even though you lose like that one person in your view count. Because eventually it will be better for you and for the rest of the people watching you.
So like an example of like a negative or negativity in chats, which would then defer others from potentially chatting or interacting. Would that be like an example?
Yeah. Obviously, at some point when there are a lot of people in chat, not everyone likes everyone. That's impossible. And there are also certain situations where I don't agree with someone in chat. But as I said, you can have a healthy discussion or a healthy, you can just talk to someone even if you do not agree with everything he says. And you can also like have fun together or talk about something else. And you don't have to like agree on everything. That's not the case. at least this is how I
yeah, I'd say I've seen quite a few good examples of that in your chat. I unfortunately don't interact in many chats nowadays because I'm a serial lurker, let's say, just in various chats. But do you, even if that there is potentially heated topics, you do discuss, as opposed to some others who may outright time out because they don't want to deal with it, you are, which can obviously have advantages and disadvantages depending on the day. But
yeah, it's, yeah, most of the time it ends up in a fiasco. yeah, I'm just not good at this. I believe, or maybe I have to learn this a little bit.
I do want to give a shout out to Chu. She seems an excellent Chu, being your wife, of course, being an excellent mod in your chat and an excellent Team Hitless moderator who I've seen do a ton in the Discord as well. So quick shout out there.
Sometimes people think that she's like too harsh or she is too unforgiving, but she just tries to the chat, like mine and also in Hitless, of course, and the server. She really likes this community a lot. She's very caring, just to say that real quick.
So sticking with the community aspect, I think something you do very well, and it would be interesting how you think of these things, so to speak, such as your you have like consistency, such as the polar bear in DS3.
Mike, yeah,
and the dancer with Deadpool.
These
like clips. Interesting, like consistencies that you, and these memes kind of thing.
Yeah,
I was just interested. Like... Go on.
I like to. I like to personalize these runs because it's just, I don't know, when you go somewhere and then there's this Divinity Original Sin music playing, you know, oh yeah, this is the Soul of Cinder fight, you know, and if you approach the dancer, there's this Deadpool clip playing all the time, and that's just what people think about, I believe, when they have seen it a lot, then they think about that, and that might be, I mean, it's fun, and I really like that entertaining part of streaming a lot. That's why I have those little things, and that's why I love to play these videos and these memes and all of that stuff. Because it's just, I think it's I hope it's entertaining, and also it personalizes these runs a little bit, and I think that's also quite good.
So that might not be obvious to someone who may not have been to your stream, so I would say obviously go to Nico's stream, but when he's going to Irithyll, there is a great moment that you'd want to be there part for.
Yeah. I should spoiler this now, or I mean, we're talking about like lore, basically. We just come up with like stupid lore. There are certain points, and especially Dark Souls 3 and also Sekiro, where we just talk about so stupid, like, made-up lore, basically.
Oh, I've seen your new Marvel one with Genny.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, carry on.
there is this, like, this meme lore part in Irithyll where we talk about that there were living polar bears in Irithyll, and they got extinct after the Irithyllians came to the area, and they killed all the polar bears because they didn't want to share the lands of now Irithyll with these polar bears, and so they tried to kill them all, and they did not succeed because there's this one polar bear left still running around and trying to survive and like killing a lot of those Irithyllians, and his name is Mike, and then I'll play this little clip from Mike, and now Mike's well known as the last polar bear of Irithyll, and I really hope that Vati will do a video on Mike soon. that would be amazing.
Oh, that would be like a great like April 1st, like if we're to do a serious lore video on Mike.
Yeah, but those meme lore stories we talk about a lot, technically. That's just fun when someone comes up with some stupid lore. For example, we had that blob in the catacombs of Carthus. We called him Bob the Blob, and he could not. He was renting space on the ceiling, and he could not afford it any longer. his mortgage or something, I don't know, and then he had to move away from the Catacombs of Carthus, and everyone was so sad that Bob had to go. It's just those little things, right?
Yeah,
that's just I find that kind of cool and engaging also, if other people come up with that stuff.
So a full-time creator is doing it with your self-employed, you're doing it within your own hours. How do you switch off, because it's your own time, how do you separate yourself from your job, so to speak?
That is almost, it feels like it's almost impossible. Maybe I have to learn that, or I'm pretty sure I have to learn that. But overall, I would say this is so hard for me. This is one of the hardest things, to not think about what could I do tomorrow, like what's my next video on YouTube, is there something I want to talk about on stream to maybe do like a reversed YouTube?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything I have to do for the sponsorships at the moment, for the deliverables? How do I approach the next run? What would be the next step? Should I start variety? Should I decrease the hours? Should I implement some more memes or whatever into the run? And should I, I don't know. There's so much to think about all the time, and it's so hard for me to just not think about it.
Could you mention variety again? It just reminded me of earlier. So, and I think this might also apply to the aspect of full-time stream that people might be aware of, in terms of variety of games as well as breaks. Because I know a lot of people know that you stream a ton and often say take a break and look tight. So could you explain, in terms of like your position, like breaks and variety of games?
You mean a variety of games in terms of on stream, or if I play stuff like a variety of games off stream as well?
So on stream, such as like if you wanted to play Hollow Knight or other such games.
So yeah, okay, I understand. Yeah, I would love to play more like games like Hollow Knight or Hades as well. Mm. It's a fantastic game. Or other games, of course, Hitless. But at the moment, it works out so well that I do not want to change something. But eventually, I will end up jumping into a variety Hitless or challenge runs, maybe Damageless, because I would love to learn new stuff as well. But I think it's smart to build up like a viewer base and to build up a certain amount of people who really watch you because they really like you, and that they also would watch you if you play, let's say, Hollow Knight Hitless, or if you play something else Hitless, and that there is a little bit of a safety net. You know what I mean? That if I have, let's say, 500 people average in your CCV, and that you have that safety net that you could drop, let's say, 100 easily with, and you can still make a living, or if you have 700 average CCV or average viewers, and you can drop like 200 to drop to 500, which obviously is still hard. It feels terrible. You can still make a living, but it feels just terrible. It's always the same. Maybe I should mention this as well. It does not matter if you have 50 average viewers and you drop to 30, or you have 30 and you drop to 25 or 20, it always feels fucking terrible, because you always start thinking, man, what am I doing wrong? Or but most of the time it's just a change of game or a change of like schedule or whatever, right? So that's what I'm working, like, to answer the questions, I'm working towards that point where I can start variety without thinking about, or without having the anxiety of losing too many people that I cannot sustain a living any longer. It's basically my goal for next year.
That's an excellent place to go off on, because I was going to query about goal setting, as you previously mentioned. You've set first of all, you set goals for the year, is that right?
Yes, every year I'll set myself goals. I don't even know if that's smart, but I do it to have something to work towards.
Could you give example of, if not for next year, the goals you set for this year and how you create those?
How do I create? I have actually no idea. I just watch how like the stream's doing by the end of the year, basically, and then I try to extrapolate. Is that the word?
Yep, that's good.
To the end of the coming year, basically, and then I set the goal for average viewers. Of course, I cannot do anything about it. People will either watch or they won't. And all I can do is just try my best, of course. Go live, and just try to be as entertaining and as entertaining as possible. And I try to put in as much work as possible, and that's all you can do about it. But for this year, my goals, for example, were that I get to the 500 average viewers, like monthly. I'm not talking about having that for one day or 2 days. Like, I have it for 30 days plus. I don't do that for subscribers or anything like that, because I think if I can make a living of Twitch, a comfy living of Twitch, I don't want to become a millionaire or anything. I really enjoy my time on Twitch. And if someone could guarantee me today that the numbers would be the same for the next 10 years and I could just safely keep on streaming without any trouble, I would rather do this than gamble and hope that I get more and more money and more subs and more views. Because I think safety and knowing that the people who watch you really like what you do and like you maybe as a person as well, that's basically the best that could possibly happen. But if you can also chase the money, of course. And I'm not saying if someone like listens to this and feels like the need to give the 10 pack of subs or whatever, I'm not saying no, it's not, that's not the case. But I really
I'm just imagining like having it, if we had a, like a chat at the moment, all of your
the fishing
dino fish. that was some genius creating that one.
Yeah, that Henry made that. That's, he's like a five head. Yeah, but that's all I'm saying. Like, I can make a living off Twitch at the moment, as you guys might know, because you can look it up anyways. You know how much I made in the last 2 years, and that's enough.
What piece of advice would you give for a new no-hit runner to the scene?
Holy shit. What piece of advice? Do not compare yourself to other people too much at the beginning. It doesn't matter if you get your hit list run in a week, in a month, or in 3 or 5 months. All that matters is that you put in the work and that you get better and you can see yourself like getting better, and that you analyze yourself and critical of yourself, and that you really try to improve on those areas where you have the problems on. And this is it was never a race, and I hope that people don't see it like a race, because some no hit runs come faster than others, and sometimes you stumble through, sometimes you have to grind like a long time for something, and it's not always it's not healthy at all, especially at the beginning, I believe, to compare yourself too much to others. And enjoy the time when you start your first run and you have these rapid improvements at the beginning, and also don't reset a lot and just have these high PBs and embrace those, because they will shrink fast and then the real struggle begins.
The real fun begins.
The real fun, yeah.
So on a variant of that, what piece of advice would you give to not perhaps a new streamer, but a streamer wanting to grow or wanting to become a better streamer? Maybe that's an easier question.
I don't know. It's really hard. Like, this is a really hard business, you could say, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to grow on platform like Twitch. Diversifying your content always helps. You will not grow on YouTube because you grew on Twitch, and it's also not the other way around, unfortunately. You have to grow on both platforms separately. And I think that the best piece of advice is that you need always a plan B, and you need a job, and you can do streaming as a hobby. And if you're consistent in what you're doing, and if you're good at what you're doing, because you need a skill set as a streamer. Like, you need a skill set for every other like job or even hobby you have. And there are people who are just better at streaming than other people, or they just learn, they do it longer, or they learned it quicker or whatever. And that's perfectly fine. You can learn it as well, but do not like throw away the rest of your life because you want to make it on Twitch, because it's unlikely, first of all. And secondly, you need to somehow make a living, right? And you can't just start on Twitch and say, yeah, I will try to make a living now on Twitch. I'll quit my job yesterday. It's not going to work out, most likely. And so just always have that plan B and do it as a hobby. And if it works out for you, you don't have to stream every day. Stream like 4 times a week in the evenings or a couple of hours and just try it for yourself. And then that's what I did as well. And then you'll eventually, or you maybe end up with your stream growing and growing, and then you might put in more work, and then it grows even further, and then you might end up as a full-time content creator. I don't know what happens to Twitch, and I'm pretty sure that live streaming will be a big deal in the future. I don't know if Twitch will be the platform, or YouTube, or both, or I have no idea.
Yeah, just to reference a point we were talking about earlier around the Twitch leaks. I think, although of course the leak and us, it's funny to do the leak site. I think that the content creators' income was like the smallest part. Like there seems to have been so much more like sensitive information released as well. But yeah. Obviously, like people's
jumping
people's
on
money.
The money. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, they're just like, oh, that first thing. Let's focus on that. But aside from that, sorry, I think it's one of the first times that the general public, at least, those who may not have like searched in depth about it, was able to access people's earnings and have a real life view of what it takes in terms of numbers on making this. So I think that was good in terms of transparency. So if people are trying to make or trying to make a decision around content creation, especially at least in terms of Twitch, it gives them that information to make a better informed decision. So I think that's a good benefit that's happened from this.
That definitely, yeah. When, as I said earlier, right, when I started off, I was also like, man, after you have 100 viewers or something, you made it. You're one of those big streamers, and then you can make a living off it. But that's just not the case. You need like way more than that, and even like then you will not be, as I said, one of those rich streamers who make like 5, maybe 6 digits a month. That is just not happening to no one almost.
Yeah, it's like the 0.000 something percent.
Yeah.
If one game could be released tomorrow, either an announced, unannounced, or a sequel to a game that you don't think will exist, what game would it be?
One game, released or announced.
So a game.
Can I name two?
Yep, you can name two.
Of course, I would love to have Elden Ring immediately. That would be nice. Even though I want to beat the run, but before Elden Ring releases, I would also want to play Elden Ring. And what I'm super super excited about is Silk Song. Of course, I would love to have an announcement of Silk Song. Like, just give me a date. Something. Is it next year? Is it in 10 years?
A little bit of info.
A tiny bit of info, that would be nice.
That's actually remind me. We talk about races, about games not being races. The one small exception will probably be Elden Ring on release with everyone. That's going to be a mad couple of weeks, let's say. Strat creation and runs and race to get there.
Yeah, I don't even know. Like, I don't even know if a lot of people want to participate immediately, because I think a lot of people, also the Nohit community, they just want to enjoy their first playthrough. It's like a one-in-a-lifetime experience with this Elden Ring game, and I think if it's well-made, and if FromSoft lives up to their high standards, you should really enjoy this game before you start grinding it. And that's what most people hopefully do. And I will do that as well. I will obviously try to play through, and then I immediately will start routing it like a lot of people. But my first playthrough, I really want to enjoy, and I don't want to rush through because of a world's first run.
I think it'll be a really interesting one. I think it'll be maybe perhaps one of the most interesting 2-2 routes because of what appears to be such different movement mechanics, yeah. Especially with the horse and yeah. All the interesting stuff that will go with that. So I think it'll be a really interesting one to root.
Yeah, and that it's open and you can just go everywhere from the beginning on, right? And that just gives you so much more opportunity.
In before the 20 minutes finish time potential. Who knows? It might end up
Zelda. Like Zelda, like in Zelda, right? Breath of the Wild. Isn't that possible that you immediately like climb the castle?
They do like a tree explosion thing, and if they do that, they can like soar onto the final area, I believe.
Yeah.
Something like that. I know they can skip right to the end pretty much immediately.
Yeah.
So you've done an enormous amount of runs, and each of them being highly celebrated. But if I said the hypest moment on stream that you've had, what would be the first run or other that would come to mind?
That was the SL1 Soulsborne Night Run. That was I don't know. It was unexpected. I thought it would take longer to beat the run. For my first Soulsborne Night Run, it took me 8 months to beat it. And the SL1 run took us only roughly like 3.5-4 months. And that was such a beautiful... That was one of my favorite... Maybe my favorite gaming moment for myself in that particular moment. It was so rough and it just... It's every time it's so worth it. Because that there's this one moment that just... I don't know. That's just... that I will always remember, you know? I think I will remember this... Even when I rewatch it on YouTube or on my Twitch channel or something, I'll always still get emotional over that. That's so, so beautiful. And I really will cherish this moment, I believe, for the rest of my life.
So I'd like to finish by asking what's in the future plans of Dino Singhail.
I will keep doing what I'm doing. We'll do the 6 game run at the moment. And after that, we planned the Gandalf run, the sorcery runs. And then I don't know how much time's left for Elden Ring. I have no idea. There's some all content stuff or all boss stuff I still have to do to finish off the rest of those Soulsborne games with all boss runs. And then I am not quite sure, but I'm not even able to beat all of this before Elden Ring release. So I actually am not very concerned about it. And then after Elden Ring released and there are a couple of months in Elden Ring and we beat some Elden Ring stuff, we might go for a 7 game run. I don't know. I mean, someone has to do it. And I'm pretty sure Hop's starting it at some point as well. So
it's where does it stop? Like when does the
I have no idea. I have no idea where it stops. I don't know. I hope it stops at some point. But it's also like it's not always super fun and every day is like just a dance. It's also really tough sometimes.
When like From Software stop making games or something.
Yeah, maybe then it might stop. I don't know. I just really like these marathon runs, you know. I don't know. That's just something I really, really like.
And where would people be looking if they wanted to check you out?
Oh, you can find me on Twitch. I'm live almost every day. I'm live every day, like 7 days a week. That's my schedule. But I have like one off day per month. And sometimes I take a second day off if I feel the need of doing so.
Again, this high work ethic right there. I took one day off per month. It's mad.
Yeah, my wife wants me to take more days off, but it works out so well. And at the moment, I feel not the need to do so. At some point, maybe I will take like 4 days, like once a week. That's what most people do, I believe, right? One day a week.
I'd also recommend checking out Dino's YouTube, which has all these amazing runs we've talked about today. So if you want to check those out, and he also creates various meme and story-based videos, I'd recommend checking out for that, as well as him and Weed Lord Gaben, another notable No Hit Runner, have started a podcast called The Posh Lizards, talking all things hitless as well. So I'd be sure to check out those as well.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you very much.
Nico, I really appreciate taking the time, dude. This has gone over what I thought, so I appreciate sticking
with
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope you enjoyed
that. Quite a long... Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me. That was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot.
I really enjoyed it, and I hope everyone listening enjoyed it as well. So I shall catch you in the next episode, and I shall see you in a bit.
Bye-bye.
If you want to hear more interviews with amazing guests, be sure to head over to youtube.com/wayofloki, Loki spelled with a C, or wayofloki.com/nohitpodcast.